This podcast is sponsored by Hercules Strong Guard Tires. Visit HerculesTiresCommercial.com to learn more.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we begin a Thursday, well, Gary and I actually already started the show during the pre-show meeting. The words smoking crack were uttered. That's a true story.
Well, the coffee isn't bad. It's not good, but it's not bad to
hey,
start the show.
Gary, how are you? Yeah, no, it's not. It isn't bad. It's not bad.
It's okay. Yeah, it's okay. It's free.
It is free coffee. It wasn't free for a while. You and I had to, because we made an agreement with management because no one else was working in the building during, a huge part of COVID, and it's just the four of us, and the other two are safely separated from us. We're all socially distanced anyway. So the coffee service for the building ran out because no one was coming to the building except us, and we don't really count, I guess. Anyway, so we ran out of coffee. You and I had to buy our own packets for a while. We had our own, I won't say contraband, because they were allowed. We just had to pay for them.
Even though probably 99.9% of radio shows over the last 18 months broadcast from home, we did not.
I did for 3 weeks when I was being re-exposed to, because my daughter and my son had COVID. I never tested positive.
No, but we
hated it.
No, but we did not. I mean, we always broadcast, except for something like that, we broadcast from the studio. And because I spent so much time yesterday, while at the same time still doing show prep, going on YouTube to listen to Norm Macdonald.
Oh, man.
We were willing to die for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And that kind of humor. I mean, he's just so full of that kind of humor.
It's so funny because I was kind of doing yesterday morning. I was doing a little bit of a tree trimming and cleaning up around the yard. And I was thinking of Norm Macdonald. I thought, since I was a kid, I would dissect comedy. I would want to know, because back when Carson was 90 minutes, my view from my top bunk, I could actually see the reflection of the TV in the window in this small house that we lived in on Laughlin Air Force Base. Pretty much every house that we lived in, it was tiny, five kids. And so I could always at least hear the TV. Sometimes I would sneak around the corner so I could watch whatever stand-up comedian was coming on. Carson. Rich Little was one of my favorites, still is. And so I've always dissected the comedy. Okay, what makes that funny? Observational humor is great. George Carlin, was one of the kings. I love Brian Regan and so many comedians. I mean, there's just way too many to name. But what made Norm Macdonald funny? And I was just thinking about it. He was just unique, but the thing is that you might get from his, stammering delivery, saying a lot, that he didn't have confidence. But every punch he delivered showed the greatest confidence that any stand-up comedian could ever have. It took real confidence to do that. You have to have that confidence to deliver the way he did. So it was kind of a ninja approach. You're watching this guy and he kind of seems, not so confident. And all of a sudden, boom, he drops the bomb on you in the punchline. And the nature of, I would say, most of those punchlines took a great deal of confidence.
Well, what I noticed is over the last really 10 years that, you know, that he had sick, that he was sick and had cancer and don't know what type it was. How, especially the last couple of years, how much death material he did. I mean, stuff that was hilarious. And I told you that I just burst out laughing because you had mentioned the one thing that he had done about cancer.
Yeah, with cancer.
You lost the battle to cancer, and it's like, when you die, cancer dies, so it's sort of a draw.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
It just, I actually heard that bit yesterday before you got to that point where he was talking about the fact, you know, people used to get sick and die. Mm-hmm. Now they wage a courageous battle. So I went in to see my uncle who had cancer, and I saw him waging the courageous battle, laying in bed with a tube stuck in him, watching Matlock.
Yeah,
and I mean, it's just, you know, you think about that kind of stuff, but it is, you can, you know, see all the humor in it, which is why I could safely say we have been willing to die for you, because when you think about it, really, it's about 99.9%, because I don't know anybody that wasn't doing their show from home. I'm trying to think of all the people that I know in the business.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody.
Everybody was.
Everybody, really. At least I know. And I mean, that's anecdotal, but you know, that really spread across. Nobody was doing their show from this building, and you probably had, you know, with all the different syndication, maybe 50 shows being done from here.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so.
Dan Bongino's producers told me, he said, hey, he's a colleague. For those that don't know, Dan Bongino is now part of our family.
His control room is 5 feet from
him. Is right here.
In fact, somebody
right behind me.
Somebody left the light on over there.
Yeah, did they? Yeah. Okay. I have to tell them about that.
Dan doesn't broadcast from here, but his control room is here. His producers and phone screeners.
Everything is,
his staff is here.
Goes through here. Right. And he was telling me, Jim was saying, yeah, you guys are the only national talk show host to not be broadcasting from home on a regular basis, you know, forget about COVID.
Yeah, that's a great point.
You know, and I said, yeah, that's true. A lot of those, most all of them.
Well, I'm not, I want to be in the studio with you, and I'm not going to move in with you.
No, I'm not. No, we're not doing that.
Or vice versa.
No, that's not.
So,
yeah,
I mean, that's the problem that we
right.
have.
Yeah, I'll travel.
But a lot of stuff yesterday. No answer in the Millie debacle, just more confusion. We'll get to that. Moderna says, and by the way, even if what Millie's spokesperson said is correct, and what Esper said is correct, you still have major problems. Josh Rogan from the Washington Post brought up exactly what we brought up yesterday, and we'll get to that coming up here in just a little bit. By the way, I'll say this: did you see Bob Woodward being interviewed anywhere yesterday at all?
I did not.
You would think that if this thing went boom as big as it did, because we have always qualified this and said if it is true, and we, as we said yesterday, we have, just like the South Carolina lawyer story that you'd read it and you go, something's wrong here. We'll always tell you if we think something just doesn't seem right with this story, and we said that yesterday about this story.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you follow what you know or what the allegation is, and then you say, okay, here are the possibilities, and we've always done that. Look, we did that with, and if any liberals say, well, that's unfair, well, we did it with Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Because for 3.5 years, we were told that Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the election, and there wasn't a bit of evidence that ever pointed in that direction at all, none.
Right.
And so we did the same thing, looking at, well, what are the possibilities, going through the pieces of evidence that you know at that point. So we'll get to that coming up. Moderna says the COVID vaccine protection wanes. First thing I saw on that, when I saw that story, I went on social media. Mm. Well, they're saying it because they want to make money.
Which
I'm sure they will on it. But that will be, in all likelihood, that will be peer reviewed, and then. And that's why you do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
This story just boggles my mind. John Stewart says he was surprised at the pushback to his lab leak theory.
Why are you surprised?
Really?
You saw, by the time he talked about it, he saw the pushback that everybody else was getting on it. Did he not? Was he not paying attention to the pushback?
Are they all living in their little bubble?
I guess.
Illegal immigrant encounters up over 300% from a year ago on the southern border for August. That coming up. L.A. County to require proof of vaccination for indoor bars and nightclubs. You know, the NFL started doing it too. I don't know. I haven't seen any place else since so many of my friends are in the business and cover the Bills.
Yeah, right.
The Buffalo Bills. I know that you've got to be vaccinated now. If you're not, and for the next
to attend a game,
you need to be vaccinated. Under 12, you need to wear a mask everywhere. But you cannot get into the NFL, at least in Buffalo now. I don't know how many other cities have done that, but in Buffalo, you cannot get in unless you have a vaccine. That means season ticket holders, that's not a part of the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll be interesting to see how many people want their money back.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that, because when you buy those season tickets, you enter into a contract.
Exactly.
Oh.
And part of that contract, you probably can win it. And they've said they're willing to give refunds to people that don't want it to do it. I do know that Cole Beasley and another player, I just saw the headline. I just popped into my mind now, and another player that didn't get the vaccine, have told fans they are willing to pay for if anybody who, you know, doesn't want to get the vaccine.
Hmm.
Boy, I wish I was in Buffalo yesterday to see how that was broadcast in the different media out there. But basically said, if you want to give up your season tickets and not go to games, we will pay for you to go to an away Bills game where you don't have to be vaccinated.
Oh,
so right. I just didn't even read the story. I just saw the headline on
it.
So L.A. County to require proof of vaccination for indoor bars and nightclubs. Joe Biden summons Sinema and Manchin to the White House.
Yeah. You know,
you got to vote for my $3.5 trillion.
Come on, man.
Come on. It's only $3.5 trillion.
I would love to hear that conversation. I want to hear that conversation.
I wonder if he talks or whether his aides are the ones that talk.
Most of it is going to be his aides, yep. And then I would think he would come into the room and mumble something and then walk away.
This is really interesting. The September 18th rally for the Justice for January 6th tells all attendees, do not wear MAGA clothing. Do not wear any pro-Trump clothing. Judge says no to the ballot measure to scrap the Minneapolis Police Department. We'll get to that. And there's a whole bunch of other stories, too. I just can't remember what they are at the moment. Some of the analysis of the California recall yesterday, because a lot of the political analysts out there talking about what does this mean? Well, it means California's extremely liberal, for one.
Yeah, it means nothing really politically has changed. And the voter base in California.
Right.
We knew this was going to happen.
When it comes to personalities and when it comes to relation to Trump, that will energize that base. That is one thing that you can say. It doesn't mean that they've changed on the issues, as we saw where they've a wide swing last year when it came to the specific issues, which is what Republicans should be pounding on, which, as we said all the time, get away from the cult of personality and deal with the issues. If you deal with the issues, if the Republican Party wants to win, how long have we said this if you've been a long-time listener to the show? From the very beginning?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I didn't put it in the same way, but I know we've been saying it for the 16 years that we've been on, and maybe I said it in a different way and you said it in a different way. But basically, we've always said it's the issues. It's the issues that are of concern right now. You know, why do you think Biden's numbers have tanked? People still like Biden. They like his personality. He's getting killed because he sucks on the issues and he lies about the issues. They still may like him. Oh, yeah, Joe seems like a nice guy. But the fact is, you win. If you're a Republican, you win. That's how you convince independents.
Yeah. And you're going to have to be pretty solid, I think, going forward, especially in if you're running for president. You're going to have to be pretty solid in demonstrating leadership qualities and skills.
Take those
for the independents.
Take those four or five issues and you pound them.
Yep. Yeah.
And don't have too much in your closet.
Right. Well, that narrows it down.
I had to add that one.
Right.
We've got a great show ahead. Your calls and comments always are welcome. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hardy, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. It's interesting, just the analysis of what went on in California because of the recall vote. And you've got, you know, Democrats yesterday out there and liberals out there yesterday saying, see, we can win and we can win big across the country. And 2022 isn't going to be as affected. We might be able to keep the House. We may be able to keep or win the Senate outright. These are good days, and I'm thinking to myself, probably not.
Yeah.
On that, you had remember that the cult of personality is huge in California, as we've said,
mm-hmm.
huge, and the cult of personality anti Trump is probably bigger there than it is anywhere else.
Yeah,
in the country, they may as and if you're a first time listener to the show, we've always gone back to last November when you looked at the proposition that were on the ballots, that everything from affirmative action that was defeated in California, that on the propositions you have moderates, which is why we said you have moderates and conservatives, many of them to actually pass propositions that go completely against the radical left that owns the Democratic Party in California.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I think that's, if you want to learn something, it's just as we said before, it's the fact that you've got to stick to those four or five issues that you know you can win on, that people really, really, really care about, and you pound them. That's what you do. You stick to the issues. I was seeing that the polling showing that that DeSantis and Rubio are doing fantastic now. That their polling numbers are just great. You don't have to denounce Trump. He simply isn't part of the current events that are going on. He's not. He may be a part of the party. If someone says, "Well, do you support Trump?"
Is he running?
Is he running for something? I don't know. Here's what I believe on the issues. I believe this. Well, Trump believed that, and I believe that too.
Yep.
On all the issues where you know the majority of people, it's a conservative viewpoint, and the majority of people believe in it. No rabbit holes. If you're disciplined, you win 2022 big, and you can win 2024, depending on who's running.
Yeah. The liberal left.
And I mean on both sides.
Sure. The liberal left has been very, I would say, effective at promoting freebies. You know, here's what you can get. Here's what I'm going to promote for you and your family. That's very much alive and in play today, but it always has been. We have said that the Republican Party fails to point out the benefits of implementing the ideas that we believe in to the average American family. The expansion of wealth, the expansion of buying power for each family as an economy expands. And we've done this repeatedly, and you don't have to go down a rabbit hole. That's the great thing. You don't have to get into the weeds on it. You can explain it pretty simply.
Let's hit on that whole thing about, you know, that if we give you free stuff, you'll vote for us, because I think it's gone a little bit further now. I think we've gone in a little bit different direction. We'll get to that coming up.
Here's your forecast.
We're looking at a prolonged period of rain for the South, which could result in some flash flooding. Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, the Carolinas, the lower Tennessee Valley, all looking at areas of rain showers through at least Sunday. Part of the issue here is a stalled frontal boundary extending from the northeast into the lower Mississippi Valley. There's a slight risk of severe thunderstorms today in the northeast and northern mid-Atlantic. The issue in the south is largely due to Tropical Depression Nicholas. From the northeast into the mid-Atlantic, there's a stationary front and low pressure system, which is causing showers from the Washington, D.C. area into Philadelphia, New York, and Boston this morning, extending back through most of Pennsylvania, but east of central New York. Look for possible showers and thunderstorms east of the Dakotas into Iowa, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. That system will be lingering at least through tomorrow as well. The National Forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Windmills and solar panels. Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harding. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up following the top of the hour, we'll get to the story. The New York Times, Washington Post has it. And this is on the Durham investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Durham is said to seek indictment of a lawyer at a firm with Democratic ties, Perkins Coie.
Yeah.
We'll get to that coming up because it's really interesting because that was, as we know, the beginning of funneling the money from Hillary Clinton and the DNC. That was where the beginning of the money funneled Fusion GPS, mm-hmm. Right, to Fusion GPS, mm-hmm. And then eventually to Christopher Steele.
Right.
So we'll get to that coming up here at the top of the hour. Interesting that for everything that we have gone through over the last, well, we started talking about it in 2017, right?
Yeah, right.
Right? January 2nd, 2017 is when we really,
yeah.
We came back from vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting that it's the New York Times and Washington Post that has the story of the first possible indictment. First possible indictment related to the collusion of the Democratic Party and the Hillary campaign with the Russians in order to change the outcome of the 2016 election.
Man, the New York Times has four reporters on this.
Yeah, so we'll get to that coming up here at the top of the hour. Just wanted to quickly go back because we were talking about the whole recall election in California and what to learn from that. And we're talking about. I just popped out of my mind now the issue that we were talking about here at the bottom of the hour. What was it?
Well, talking about the issues and how you promote what is the Republicans don't promote.
No, it was a particular
the
was,
benefits
yeah.
to families, and the Democrats have been promoting and
oh, no,
got
no,
into
no.
this.
I got it. No, the free stuff. Yeah,
and it's gone far beyond that now. After especially in the COVID age, because what? You can't reverse that once you put that into motion. The hand is always going to be out.
But the point that I wanted to make was exactly because so you can give the money, and if you don't continue to get the money, then you're the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
But what we've seen over the last couple of months is it seems the polling is showing it across the board. I don't care what poll you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
You may not believe the polls, you know, one particular poll, whatever. Well, we brought a poll yesterday about the bad numbers of Biden, and nobody said I don't believe polls. But what it seems like is the polling is showing that the public's concern with inflation is much greater than giving people stuff.
Yeah.
If that is the case, then all the free stuff takes a back seat because the Republicans, if someone comes and says, well, you know, we were getting money, we should have gotten money longer. Well, the Democrats were in power and they dropped it. And the reason the Democrats are dropping it is because Democrats in New York, I know Democrats in New York, I was just there last week, and Democrats in New York are saying, my God, you know, wish we could give you back more unemployment and give you stuff and do the enhanced unemployment, but it's killing our local economy.
Yeah.
People aren't going to work, and that's even recognized with Democrats right now. So once you start giving the money, the pathology of dependency starts. And when you take away, you know, the free stuff, well, then people get angry at you. But who do they get angry at? The people who gave them the stuff and then took it away. And so if the Democrats claim credit for it, but even besides that, because I don't think that's even the biggest issue. The biggest issue is the fact that people have realized that, and there is an understanding in polls across the board. And we were shocked, maybe it was 2 months ago, when inflation started going up, and it was like people are more concerned with inflation, and people have, you know, are looking at the spending from the government, and they look at it and they say, well, that's one of the reasons that even though I got a raise, is that it's been wiped out because of inflation. And there is a concern in the nation about inflation, which I'm happy about. I'm finally happy that people have woken up to the fact that it doesn't matter what kind of free stuff you get. It doesn't matter if the government comes out and says, look, we're going to spend all of this money. What matters is at the end of the day when people say, I don't care what the government's doing and all the free stuff they claim they're giving me, I don't have as much money. I don't have as much spending power as I had just 6 months ago or a year ago. And it seems like the public has picked up on that. So one unique thing for 2022 and 2024 that may happen is the fact that Democrats can't use that anymore.
Yeah, right. I don't know where you go from here, because I think there may be we've talked about the polls that show that the American people know you can't keep spending like we've spent through COVID, and you can't keep giving money away like we did. It doesn't mean that if they decide to give more money away that people will go, no, I'm sending it back. It doesn't work that way. Anybody and everybody, including corporations, if the government is handing, if the American government is sending checks out, everybody puts their hands out. And so I guess the question is as a conservative, as a Republican, wow, conservative. Remember those guys? As a conservative, how do you get out and how do you campaign? You have to talk about the very basics of the expansion of wealth, of what a booming economy means for people and how you get to that point. And we were seeing a great deal of progress before COVID hit. It was at a pretty decent pace. And as a result, you had very, very low unemployment. People had work. They were working. And right now, things have changed on a couple of, you know, different fronts. That is the free stuff. And there are still plenty of people that want more free stuff. Even if they say to a pollster, yeah, we're spending too much money. Now, where's my check? And then beyond that, after COVID, yeah, I don't want to go back to working with people in an office or at a restaurant or at a bar or whatever, in the service industry or whatever it might be. I just don't want to do that anymore. And people don't, I don't know where the wake-up call is, if there is one. And so I don't know how, if you were to campaign, let's say next year was an election year for president and not a midterm. I don't know how you do that and get through to those individuals who have changed their mind about work. Because I don't know how you solve that problem. There are jobs out there right now that are where you're getting offers. They're offering people, you know, a great deal of money. Just show up. Well, no thanks. And I don't know how you change that. I don't know what you do in a campaign to change that. You know, when you can, if you get that answer and the very basics of economics and the expansion of wealth, you can explain it very easily. It's not just a sound theory. It's proven. Yeah, but I don't want to. I don't know how you change that. I really don't. So that would, I guess that would be my question. And it's no wonder there are plenty of conservatives, and I would say independents in California. But politically, the landscape hasn't changed in terms of the ratio. So all due respect to our friend Larry Elder, it wasn't in the cards. That wasn't going to happen. It doesn't mean he doesn't have a future if he wants to run for office again. Except for in California, especially in those states, and you and I have talked about it, they really want the lockdown stuff. They really like the mandate stuff.
The Democrats really do. Yeah.
They really do.
Yeah.
And it really is kind of the coddling effect, right? Hey, government is here. You know, I know it's not the federal government, but California is a massive state. So it's the same effect, right? We'll coddle you. We'll take care of you. Just stay home. Keep your mask on, okay? Okay? Close the door. I know you're fully vaccinated and you're perfectly safe.
Well, I actually think it goes beyond that. I think that the COVID is much more attached to the Democratic Party than the Republican Party.
Oh, I think so too.
Again, there are passionate Republicans and conservatives that are, for example, against the vaccine, or the other day for the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may have a number of people, you know, in there that are there, but there is also the anti-vaccine that exists, especially in blacks and Hispanics, to a greater percentage because of the fear that's been thrown out by especially the liberal black leadership early on, and because of the statements from Harris, the statements from Biden, and the statements from Cuomo about that they basically didn't trust the vaccine because they were communicating they didn't trust the vaccine because Trump had come out with it. Now, on the other hand, you have a significant, you see the virtue signaling, as we've talked about, with, you know, getting the vaccination. But when you look at it, Trump has been clear. Trump was the one that came out. He's the one that promoted the vaccine and that it was going to be out there, and has said, I got the vaccine. Get the vaccine. So you can't say it's because of Trump that Trump has led the army of Trump people to not get the vaccine. You can't make that case.
No, you can't.
But you can make the case, for example, that suppressing the media is exclusive to the Democratic Party, for example, when it comes to Jon Stewart coming out the other day. And we got the article here stating, I was completely shocked by the response to the, you know, to when I came out. Because remember, he came out in June when he said that.
Right.
And now we know over the summer that you have people inside the Biden administration that believe that the Wuhan virus lab leak theory, they believe, is stronger than the nature theory. So now it's become completely mainstream. But Democrats were full on across the board that any talk that was happening should be banned. So you talk about being unreasonable, Democrats not wanting to get, and passionate about not wanting to get to the truth of where COVID came from. How unreasonable is that? And that attaches right to the Democratic Party.
Yeah. Sure.
But you look at Republicans, I don't know any Republican. Even Rand Paul isn't anti-vax. And the things that he said, for example, well, I've got the natural immunity. Well, it may not be enough. As we find out now, the consensus is if you get COVID, you have better immunity than if you get the vaccine.
Amazing how that works.
And so science is wonderful.
Yeah.
But when you look at the unreasonable things of shutting down free speech, when it comes to COVID because of theories. That was exclusive. Mm-hmm. And so I think, and so you look at that, and I believe that that probably played a bigger role than it will in future elections. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up on the top of the hour, where is Durham? Well, New York Times and Washington Post have a story about a indictment that should come down here probably, well, it has to come down by this weekend. Right. We'll tell you you know, what the indictment is about, but it goes to the heart of it looks like Perkins Coie here at the moment. Mm. Interesting that it's the New York Times and the Washington Post that are breaking this story, though.
Right.
But we'll get to it coming up following the top of the hour. Plus, looking at some of the stats from COVID, it looks like the places that had a lot of COVID a month ago, 2 months ago, are going in a direction which is down, and those that did not are going up, as was expected by people like Scott Gottlieb, the former director of the FDA.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that and more on the way.
This hour's news is brought to you by Travel Centers of America, home of World Blends Coffee, the freshest roast on the road.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. Get our Red Eye Radio Show app, put it on your phone, and listen 24-7, 365. Because our show is our podcast, and our podcast is our show. Isn't that all a nice little tidy package for you there?
Yes.
All right, now, before we tell you about the news on the Durham investigation, we know we have new listeners that may not know it. We've simplified it so you know that when we make this statement, that, as you know, Trump was accused of colluding with the Russians to hack the election. There was never any evidence that he did that. And that went on for a long time. In fact, just the opposite happened. It was the DNC, and by the Democrat standard of what collusion with the Russians was, which is no evidence, just making the accusation, then by the Democrat standard, it was the DNC and the Hillary campaign that colluded with the Russians to change the outcome of the election in 2016. Huh? What? It's very, very simple. And before we tell you this story, we'll just walk you through it very, very quick. The DNC and the Hillary campaign took campaign cash and gave it to a law firm, but transferred it to a law firm, Perkins Coie. Perkins Coie then took that money and gave it to an opposition research firm by the name of, I got mind blank here,
Fusion GPS
hired former British spy Christopher Steele, gave him money to find stuff on Trump. Christopher Steele somehow hooked up with a guy by the name of Iggy Delchenko. That's the Russian part of it. A Russian national who had worked for the Brookings Institute, basically a liberal, very Democrat. Like think tank, and they hired him to find dirt in a drunken, from what has been reported, in a drunk fest with some friends. He put together all this made up stuff that became the dossier. The dossier is what the FBI used to get a warrant for Carter Page. And the Trump campaign. That's what started.
That's why they attempted the warrant before that, but what changed in the successful application that yielded the warrant was the addition of the dossier.
Yes. Just so people that are first-time listeners to the show or may not have listened to us for a couple of months when we were going through this over and over and over again, and that's why we say by the Democrat standard, the only people that colluded with the Russians in an attempt to change the outcome of the 2016 election was the Hillary campaign and the DNC.
Mm-hmm.
Prove us wrong. You can't.
No.
And since we have stated that, have you ever received one person that has disagreed with the analysis of that?
No.
Or said that that isn't true?
No.
Because you can't, because that's the truth, as we all know it. And so, that's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been, as we know, widely reported. So what has happened here in the last few hours is both the Washington Post and the New York Times leading on this story. Durham is said to seek an indictment at the lawyer at firm with Democrat ties. That is Perkins Coie that we had mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
The DNC and the Hillary campaign, they used Perkins Coie, the law firm, to funnel the money to Fusion GPS. The lawyer, Michael Sussman, is accused of lying to the FBI in 2016 in a meeting about Trump and Russia. Of course, he denies wrongdoing. John Durham, this is from the New York Times, John Durham, special counsel appointed by the Trump administration to scrutinize a Russia investigation, has told the Justice Department that he will ask a grand jury to indict a prominent cybersecurity lawyer on a charge of making a false statement to the FBI, people familiar with the matter said. Any indictment of the lawyer, Mr. Sussman, a former federal prosecutor and now a partner in the Perkins Coie law firm and who represented the Democratic National Committee on issues related to the Russia's 2016 hacking of its servers, is likely to attract significant political attention. Donald Trump and his supporters have long accused the Democrats and Perkins Coie, whose political law group, a division separate from Mr. Sussman, represented the party and the Hillary Clinton campaign, of seeking to stoke unfair suspicions about Mr. Trump and his purported ties to Russia. The case against Mr. Sussman centers, by the way, they're using language I would not use, but they're quite accurate so far.
Mm.
The case against, where were the New York Times, where were you on this?
Right.
3 years ago.
Right.
The case against Mr. Sussman centers on the question of who his client was when he conveyed certain suspicions about Mr. Trump and Russia to the FBI in September of 2016. Among other things, investigators have examined whether Mr. Sussman was secretly working for the Clinton campaign, which he denies. An indictment is not a certainty. On rare occasions, grand juries decline prosecutors' request, but Mr. Sussman's lawyers acknowledge on Wednesday that they expected him to be indicted while denying that he made any false statement. Mr. Sussman has committed no crime. Any prosecution here would be baseless, unprecedented, and an unwarranted deviation from the apolitical and principled way in which the Department of Justice is supposed to do its work. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
We are confident that if Mr. Sussman is charged, he will prevail at trial and vindicate his good name. A spokesperson for Attorney General Merrick Garland, who has the authority to overrule Mr. Durham, they mean on this indictment,
right,
but is said to have declined to, did not comment, nor did the spokesman for Mr. Durham. The accusation against Mr. Sussman focuses on a meeting he had on September 19th, 2016, with James Baker, who was the FBI's top lawyer at the time. According to people familiar with the matter, they spoke on condition of anonymity. Because of the 5-year statute of limitations on such case, Mr. Durham has a deadline of this weekend,
right,
to bring a charge over the activity from that date. Because I know if it's just this indictment by this weekend, you may have a lot of people complaining, well, the Durham's done nothing. He has to bring this out. You know, there may be more coming down,
right,
the pike, but we don't know. We don't know what they're looking at.
It doesn't mean he's done. The urgency is very clear.
At the meeting, Mr. Sussman relayed data and analysis from cybersecurity researchers who thought that odd internet data might be evidence of a covert communications channel between servers associated with the Trump Organization and Alpha Bank, a Kremlin-linked Russia financial institution. The FBI eventually decided those concerns had no merit. The special counsel, who later took over the Russia investigation, ignored the matter in its entirety in the report. Mr. Sussman's lawyers have told the Justice Department that he sought the meeting because he and the cybersecurity researchers believed that the New York Times was on the verge of publishing an article about the Alpha Bank data, and he wanted to give the FBI a heads up. In fact, the Times was not ready to run the article, but published one mentioning Alpha Bank 6 weeks later. Mr. Durham has been using a grand jury to examine the Alpha Bank episode and appeared to be hunting for any evidence that the data had been cherry-picked or the analysis of it knowingly skewed. The New Yorker and other outlets have reported. To date, there has been no public sign that he has found any such evidence. Mr. Durham, well, of course, there's not going to be a public sign.
Right.
Mr. Durham did apparently find an inconsistency. Mr. Baker, the former FBI lawyer, is said to have told investigators that he recalled Mr. Sussman saying that he was not meeting him on behalf of any client, but in a deposition before Congress in 2017, Mr. Sussman testified that he sought the meeting on behalf of an unnamed client who was a cybersecurity expert and had helped analyze the data. Moreover, internal billing records Mr. Durham is said to have obtained from Perkins Coie are said to show that when Mr. Sussman logged certain hours as working on the Alpha Bank matter, though not meeting with Mr. Baker, he billed the time to Mrs. Clinton's 2016 campaign.
So there you have it. You've got documentation. If this report is true,
right.
You would have documentation.
Another partner at Perkins Coie, Mark Elias, who was then serving as a general counsel for the Clinton campaign. Mr. Elias, who did not respond to the inquiries, left Perkins Coie last month. Hmm. In their attempt to head off any indictment, Mr. Sussman's lawyers are said to have insisted that their client was represented the cybersecurity expert he mentioned to Congress and was not there on behalf of or at the direction of the Clinton campaign. And they also said that they've argued that the billing records are misleading because Mr. Sussman was not charging his client for work on the Alpha Bank matter, but needed to show internally that he was working on something. He was discussing the matter with Mr. Elias, and the campaign paid a flat monthly retainer to the firm, so Mr. Sussman's hours did not result in any additional charges, said.
That's weak. Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
So that's so there is some movement after how long?
Well, for Durham, it's been
2.5 years.
Yeah, right about that.
April of 19.
Mm-hmm.
April, early May of 19 is when the investigation started.
Right.
So.
Well, we'll see, right?
5 months, yeah. Almost 2.5 years.
Well, because if you get down to lying to the FBI is one thing, but what the content of the alleged lie, the alleged crime, the actual subject matter here, again, of whether or not the lawyer was working on behalf of the Clinton campaign could go, I guess, deeper. And could it be one of those things that kind of opens the door? Is it based on just the timing of it? And the statute of limitations on this charge, which again runs out this weekend, I would say we may not learn. It's probably likely we won't. It won't be the door opener, I guess, right, to everything that Durham is possibly looking at. It's more so that, look, this was a clear that Durham believes, again, if it's accurate and true, that this was a violation of the law, that he lied to. This lawyer lied to the FBI, and that the Justice Department needs to act on it. Now, having said that, Merrick Garland Oh, man. The liberal hate going in his direction on social media has been relentless pretty much from the beginning, but it kind of has its peaks and valleys, right? Depending on what's going on at the DOJ. So this indictment happens. You know that's going to, I mean, it's going to be, you know, why in the world is Merrick Garland the attorney general? You know that's, man, they're going to just absolutely go after him on social media, as they have been. But this will be, and we'll see again, because as they mentioned in the report, Merrick Garland has the ability to say, nah, I don't see it. We're not going to indict. And the indictment hasn't happened yet. It's a story that it could come down in the next couple of days. Tons of stories, plenty of stories have been wrong.
Well, it has
about
to.
This.
It has to be today, right? If it's the 16th, do they do it precisely by the calendar, by the number of days?
I can't tell you that. They say 5 years in the story, but I don't know in terms of the number of days. So I don't know where the actual,
because it was September. It was September 16th of 2016 that they met. So.
Was it the 16th? In the Times, it says September 2016. Was it the actual 16th of September?
Oh, okay. Okay, I'll have to find it again.
All right.
I lost. I dumped the story.
All right. So, but I guess the question would be, you know, is there a possibility that Merrick Garland could still step in front of this? Yeah. It hasn't, until it happens, it hasn't happened. But it is interesting that both the Post and the New York Times, really, the New York Times was on this, from what I can see. They were the ones that broke it. And the Washington Post had a story that broke a couple hours ago, hour and a half, 2 hours ago. But they're both on it, and that's the point. And so it seems that this could take traction.
September 19th.
19th, yes. Okay, all right.
September 19th.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, so. So they have until this weekend. Yeah.
Yep. And so I wonder where that is going to go and if Merrick Garland would step in front of it. Look, by all accounts, remember, they always said Merrick Garland when it comes to the law, you know, but if something is very clear and you've got the evidence, especially documentation.
But if you jump in front of this indictment and say no and that'll be leaked, Republicans will have a field.
Oh, there is no doubt.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on construction safety. Flaggers. Highway and street construction workers put their lives on the line every time they go into work. The workers most at risk of being struck by a passing car are flaggers, whose job it is to control traffic in a construction zone by holding a sign that tells drivers to stop or slow down. Keep an eye out for flaggers when driving through work zones, and when you see them, immediately follow the instructions posted on their sign. When possible, move over to allow more space between you and the flagger. Slow down so that you're traveling no faster than the posted construction zone speed limit. If it's dark or weather conditions are poor, slow down even more. Like you, construction workers rely on the drivers around them to help keep them safe. Do your part by following their instructions, slowing down, and giving them as much space as you can. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This report is brought to you by National Truck Protection and Premium 2000 Plus, the number one selling aftermarket truck warranties in North America, available at thousands of used truck dealers everywhere.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see what happens here. I still find it amazing because it's something that, you know, we move on to other topics, and you think about how long the, you know, the claim that it'd be interesting to do a poll. How many Americans believe that Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the election? Or ask the question, was there evidence that Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the election? Mm-hmm. Or was more evidence that it was actually the Democrats, and see what comes, how that comes out? I'd love to see that polling.
Yeah, right.
Because by the Democrat standard of what collusion is, which is no evidence, we know that it was the Democrats and the Hillary campaign. And that's the problem here. Even though this lawyer, Mr. Sussman, may be nothing, it does, if he's ever indicted, and at that point, just even in the indictment itself, which the New York Times says is coming down, again gets the talk going that it was the Hillary campaign and the DNC that attempted to change the outcome of the election, not Trump.
The direct link.
Yes.
To the Hillary campaign. And if and that could start the ball rolling, because it really will, I think, you know, certainly be about the public discussion about this going forward and the media coverage, too. But it's a huge step that the New York Times really broke this story on the indictment, the pending indictment possibly coming down over the next couple of days.
Silence is violence. We're doing our part. Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome. Good morning. Thank you so much for being here this morning. Just reading a ton of articles here during the break, skimming a bunch of them. One from the Washington Examiner talking about the fact that Democrats now are pounding on what happened in Afghanistan. That if you looked at the Senate yesterday, the questions, I mean, Democrats now pounding on the fact of why does it seem like, you know, why, well, to paraphrase from some of them, why did we kill a human aid worker and his children?
Right. Yeah.
That's one of them. The whole point that everybody was in agreement. Everybody was in agreement that we needed to get out of Afghanistan, and we need to get out in that way. That was the only way. And you're having, I think Tim Kaine came out yesterday and was saying, don't buy that. The evidence doesn't show that whatsoever. And then you've got Mark Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Milley. Reading here from thehill.com, become a lightning rod for the Biden administration, which is facing calls for him to resign over the book excerpts. You know, you think about his spokesperson speaking yesterday, didn't deny anything, just tried to put it into different context.
Uh-huh. Right. It wasn't denied that he said it.
Kirby would not confirm the events in the book, but said Milley, as a key military advisor to the president, would be intimately involved in the process of providing advice and counsel to the defense secretary, and that the president, in the event of any military strike, at the heart of the controversy is two scenes in peril that describe Milley's move in the waning months of the Trump administration to prevent any erratic attacks on other nations and a possible strategy to detract from Trump's election loss. In one instance, Milley called his Chinese counterpart, reportedly looking to assure the general and the Chinese president that the U.S. was not preparing a strike. The call followed intelligence in the days before the 2020 election that revealed Beijing believed Trump was preparing to launch such an attack to manufacture an international crisis. Where'd they get that from? How do they know that?
Right.
And it was, do I have it? Did I have Josh Rogan from the Washington Post brought that up?
That the possibility that we talked about. And was it because he said, Milley basically sounded the alarm?
He goes, why did Esper and Milley think, if that was true, that the Secretary of Defense was in on it, mm-hmm. it does clear Milley of going around, you know, civilian, you know, the civilian leadership,
right?
And now afterwards, you had what the deputy who became then the acting defense secretary, was his name Miller, I think, mm-hmm. said, I heard nothing about this. So that still has to be resolved. But even if, let's say, because we've always said the story, we've always said if it's true. Mm-hmm. And we've always said something is weird about this story. It says, why did Esper and Milley think China needed reassurance? We asked this question yesterday. Good question. Because Trump was actually thinking of nuking them? No. Because Beijing signaled they were concerned about escalation? Yes. Well, was China actually telling the truth about that? Maybe, maybe not. Context, excuse me. Nuance. Think about it. They're playing games with each other.
Right.
They do that all the time.
Matthew Broderick. More games.
To be clear, Esper's message to other countries, this is from Josh Rogan again, conveyed by the OSD staff was one of general assurance, reassurance that we're okay. And keeping lines of communication open. It did not include specifics reported in Woodward's book about the purported Milley promise to warn China before any attack. And my question is, and I don't think anybody hit on this yet, my question is, forget about January 6th, they talked before the election and said there would be no attack. And then on January 8th, when they talked again, well, it seems like they couldn't reassure the Chinese. Now, whether the Chinese were playing games, who knows? But I go back and go, well, yeah, because Milley got them all freaked out by saying, we'll call you if there's going to be an attack.
Right.
If that happened.
Well, that's the part. I mean, really, I think that's the effective part. Did he have the authority? Was he authorized to make that call to General Lee? And if he was, he certainly isn't authorized to promise a heads up to the, in that case, if we were attacking them, they would be a direct enemy if we're going to war, if it's an act of war against China, to give the enemy a heads up. And then to promise that in a phone call, someone try and convince me that was authorized.
Well,
hey, promise them, just tell them you'll give them a heads up. The President Trump cleared that. You can do that. Go ahead.
One of the things that has not been cleared up is the whole point in the book that then Milley talked to senior military leaders, looked at them eye to eye, and in a way got, according to the book, like an oath from them that they would not do anything unless basically they got permission from Milley to do it if it ever came to the point of nuclear weapons. Now, is that true or not?
Yeah, that would be a huge
conspiracy. I didn't see anybody address that yesterday. Maybe they did. I didn't see it. If there's an article out there, somebody send it to me because that's extremely important. Dan McLaughlin for National Review, because it came out yesterday where Jennifer Griffin wrote from Fox News. She said, no, we're being told by our sources that there were people there when he made the phone calls.
Well, I was going to say, and we didn't say it yesterday on the show, if Milley is on the phone with a top general from China, that phone call would have to be populated by other individuals.
Right.
Just by default, it's going to be, unless he did some kind of, spy move and went off campus and used a burner phone to call a general in China, which didn't happen.
And as Dan McLaughlin says, by itself, that doesn't tell us much. Of course, a general talking to a foreign military leader will have his own staff in the room. But did he have them agreeing with him like he did the other military leaders, if that part of the story is true? If if he is taking away authority from the president, it is more rather than less dangerous that he has help. The question, however, is whether the senior political leadership was in the loop. That is where the additional reports from Jonathan Swan of Axios and Josh Rogan of The Post came into the picture. Swan reports, based on anonymous sources, that Milley was acting on the instructions of then-Defense Secretary Mark Esper. Then-Defense Secretary Mark Esper worried that the Chinese were misreading the situation and that their misconception could lead to a conflict nobody wanted. Esper directed his policy office to issue a back-channel message to the Chinese to reassure them that the U.S. had no intention of seeking a military confrontation. The message, don't overread what you're seeing in Washington. We have no intention to attack, and let's keep the lines of communications open. These back-channel communications were handled a couple of levels below Esper, one of the sources said. U.S. officials involved thought the Chinese received the initial message well. Milley followed up later in the month with a call to his Chinese counterpart to reiterate the message. Two of the sources confirmed it's unclear whether anyone at the Pentagon told Trump that this was going on and this is what they were doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if the idea is that they believe Donald Trump is the threat, if TDS is at work, and there's this grand conspiracy, then they wouldn't approach the president with it. But again, there's way too much missing.
Right. If Milley was following Esper's lead, this is from Dan McLaughlin of National Review, something not even hinted by Woodward or Costa.
Mm.
That does not make this a total non-story. There is still the question of whether the Secretary of State was undermining the president. But does it exonerate the general of having done what the Post previously reported? Because the buck stops with his... But it does exonerate the general of having done what the Post previously reported because the buck stops with his civilian boss, which, of course, would be true.
Right.
Given the gravity of the charge, Congress is entitled to more than unnamed sources. General Milley is due to testify before the Senate Armed Services Committee on September 28th, and he should be walked on the record through the Woodward and Costa report and asked under oath whether he said what was reported, whether he did so under the direction of the Secretary of Defense, and whether he was the source for the Woodward-Costa story, because that's the other thing that was brought up. Is the fact that, well, this was a book to pound on Trump.
Yeah, right. Trump was so bad
right.
that his top general, basically, had to reach out to China and give them a heads up that they might be attacked. And then, well, basically saying that if they were attacked, he would call them ahead of time.
So whoever talked to the Washington, or talked to the, excuse me, talked to... Woodward and Costa
mm-hmm.
was somebody who most likely was extremely friendly with them or might have been Milley himself.
I was thinking that throughout the day yesterday that and we talked about this in the pre-show meeting, I wouldn't be surprised if Milley was the source and that he brought the documents himself. Or somebody very close to him on behalf of him, keeping in mind that he's still serving.
Because the big question is, whoever got to the point of thinking that Trump was going to shoot missiles at China? Where did that thought process come from to begin with? Now, they're claiming China. Well, how did you know China thought he was going to nuke him?
Right.
And if China was sending you that message, were they playing with you?
Right.
And then they wanted to see how great your Trump derangement syndrome was. They were testing the leadership of the Defense Department to see how they would react to something that they didn't believe was going to happen. But it was a way to screw with the U.S. military.
The big flaw, leadership. The big hole here in that theory, let's just say... Okay, I have to say this, but let's just say that, okay, China was genuinely concerned that Trump might attack. Why would they do that? Why would they be genuinely concerned? What would bring them to that level, right, of fear, and to the point that they were showing, they were demonstrating that fear in their positioning? Well, it would have to be intel. There would have to be something substantial.
Right. And doing the Navy exercises is not one.
That's not one of them. No. This is something we do on a regular basis. Now, it should mean something different to, even like with North Korea and the signals we send there. It's always a show of power. But those exercises we do all the time. That's not irregular. So it would be intel. It would be intel coming from here, which means that Milley would be one of those that would have actual intel, not the exercises in the South China Sea or Trump's belligerent rhetoric against China. Real intel.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Remember when the president said everyone was in agreement to leave Afghanistan?
Yeah.
Remember he said that? Everybody. And we said, he's lying.
Mm-hmm.
He's outright lying. And we're eventually going to find out that isn't the truth. Well, take a guess who wasn't on board.
Kamala Harris?
The former commander of all U.S. troops in Afghanistan who stepped down in July.
July. What else happened in July?
General Scott Miller commanded all of the U.S. and NATO troops in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday told the Senate Armed Services Committee in a closed-door briefing he was against leaving Afghanistan. The man who was in charge of Afghanistan, not only for the United States, but NATO, and know the entire situation, said no and told the administration that.
Oh, so I guess everybody wasn't in agreement. Yeah.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric.
Hi.
I'm Gary over here.
That's right. That's true. That is accurate and true.
Hey, just get our app and put it on your phone and you choose when to listen.
Yeah, it's your choice.
So
we speak, you decide.
I just watched a little bit of some of the video that came out yesterday with the gymnasts that were testifying about the failure of the FBI back in 2015.
Yeah.
How in the hell does that happen?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Christopher Wray on Wednesday apologized to the victims of Larry Nassar for the way that the agency handled abuse allegations against a gymnastics doctor. Quote, I want to begin by saying to the brave women who testified this morning, I'm deeply and profoundly sorry to each and every one of you, Wray said in a hearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee. You know, Simone Biles and you know, was there and a bunch of other different gymnasts were there. Sorry for what you and your families have been through. I'm sorry that so many different people let you down over and over again. And I'm especially sorry that there were people at the FBI who had their own chance to stop this monster back in 2015 and failed. That is inexcusable. The Senate hearing follows a bombshell report from the Justice Department's Inspector General that faulted the agency for not handling the allegations against Nassar in a serious manner. Ray said on Wednesday that he ordered the review when he heard that there were people in the FBI who failed the victims. Couple of questions. How does that kind of abuse go on for as long as it did in an organization like that without being exposed sooner? I'm asking questions. I'm not making judgments.
Right.
There's the number of gymnasts who apparently were sexually abused. And then how does the FBI fail so miserably when your only job is to investigate crimes like this?
Well, look at it, you know, as a parent, I always look at the job, the number one job is protector, right? As your children are growing and they're moving into the world and all of that. But look at all of the protectors that were in place and should have been doing their job. Not that it doesn't happen, but according to these allegations, it went on for so long and was happening in so many instances. How in the world, with so many people involved in that organization, both participating in support of the gymnasts and everything else, all of the activity that is required, all of the people that are required for that organization to thrive. How does that happen? How does it not get up? I mean, I understand that what happens with victims and that they don't want to come forward, and I understand that part of it, but at some point there had to be other people who knew. And the failure of the FBI of Nassar and the FBI, the agent and those who didn't act when they should have, that's just a whole other mind-boggling level of what in the world is going on. And I don't see how, with all of the people involved in that organization, there was just a systemic failure to protect those victims. And it lasted for far too long. I mean, again, according to the allegations.
You know, you remember the Penn State scandal, too, and you say, you know, how does this,
right.
You know, how does that stuff, you know, how does it happen? And I believe, I'm trying to think, I believe it was, I think it was, I don't know who he was talking to. It was Joe Rogan. And he was talking about how Hollywood people get sucked into Scientology, and then took it further than that to talk about the victims of I can't think of his name now. I used to work for his company. I can't think of his name.
The agent and producer.
Yes.
I just blanked on his name too.
We always blank on the exact Harvey Weinstein.
Weinstein, yeah.
Jeez, I worked for his company. I couldn't remember his name. So I'm worse than you on that one. he was making the point that, and it may apply here, that he said, you know, people come from all over the world, you know, or all over the country,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes all over the world, to go to Hollywood, and they have nothing.
Right.
And they, you know, they get that chance and they get into that producer's office, and it's the only thing that they've ever wanted. And he was talking about a variety of different things, too. First, the political mindset, that you have to have the political mindset. Otherwise, if you don't have the political mindset, you know, of being a lib, you don't move anywhere unless you're well established. And then he was talking about, too, that how willing you are, because your whole focus is to make it. So anybody who's offering you anything, that you're much more susceptible to anything that is being thrown your way because you're so focused, because you've spent your entire life dedicated to doing one thing and attaining one goal. And therefore, you're more susceptible early on and more wary of reporting. I don't know whether that's true or not. I haven't been in the situation. He's been in Hollywood, so, you know, he has talked about that. And in other, you look at whether it's gymnast or football players or anybody that is in it, that's your old, you know, that is your solo goal. You know, I never had there. I had, this was a goal that I had, but I had numerous goals. So for me, it was always like, well, if I do it, great. If not, well, I'm going to do what I want to do. And nobody's going to tell me what to do. So, I mean, I wasn't easily influenced. You're the same type of personality. I don't know. But, yeah, it's so upsetting when you see it, when it goes on, and you're like, how the hell, besides the monsters that do it, that commit these heinous crimes. But, and then you see, but, you know, you look at Weinstein, and people knew.
Very high profile and powerful people in Hollywood knew.
They knew.
It was to the point that they were making jokes about it on stage. Comedians were at huge Hollywood events, award shows. And people were laughing because they knew about it. I don't think it's funny, but that's an indication that everybody was aware. And in this case, are there similar elements? Because if you think about an elite athlete, they put in work as children, and it is countless hours.
Yep.
I've only played a few sports in my life. I can't imagine the dedication and what you have to go through. I certainly realize that, I know that, but I can't imagine being in that position. And then, you know, this, you reach a level, and then all of a sudden this is happening, and you don't want to speak up. If you're a victim, there are different reasons you don't want to tell people. Victims often feel shame, but there are other individuals, there are other adults. An FBI agent. How in the hell does that happen?
Well, when you see here, I mean, this goes back to 2018. The Lansing State Journal reported that the Michigan Attorney General's office listed the names of 11 Michigan State University employees that were told about Nassar's abuse but failed to report it to authorities. Mm. They had received complaints from 1997 through 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And listen to this. I mean, this shows you how widespread it was. Of the 280 survivors interviewed for the investigation.
Oh, my gosh.
And then to the point, you know, because you look at the Harvey Weinstein thing, you're like, my God, how did, you know, how did that go on so long? And then you see this case.
Well, you know,
and you,
Hollywood is built
with the FBI
is made of a bunch of liars. Hollywood is a bunch of liars. They lie for a living, and they are all about themselves. When it comes to an athletic program like this, things are very different. The motivation is different. The dedication, the discipline is different in terms of the sport itself, and those, not just the athletes. But we're talking hundreds?
That's what the story said, yeah.
And what about friends, family, other adults? They had to have known.
18 years he was the team doctor for the United States women's national gymnastics team.
It's tragic.
You just, you know,
it's just tragic.
And then you see it and you get upset when you know how many people knew about it and didn't say anything about it. But then when it gets to the FBI's desk and they basically ignore
right.
it and don't go. And by the way, that FBI special agent in the office was Indianapolis, I think,
he was fired.
Was fired, yeah.
Right. As it should be.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have to be a massive deal. It reaches the desk of an FBI agent. How could you not act on it immediately? Knowing the potential scope and how huge this could be. I mean, that's the job. You act on something like that. It came to you for a reason. Why would you ignore it? Why would you not pursue it?
For more than a year, complaints to the FBI went unanswered. And Nassar continued treating and raping gymnasts at the Michigan State University, a high school in Michigan, and a gymnastics club in Michigan. Four elite gymnasts testified before the U.S. Senate yesterday regarding the mishandling by FBI agents and of abuse allegations brought against Nassar and how the agents made false statements regarding their reports and misinformation about a botched investigation.
I just, it's because it's repeated reports. You're getting these reports repeatedly and you don't act on it.
I don't get it.
I just don't get that.
And that's your only job.
Yeah. To investigate.
Yeah. It's your only job.
I'm not saying get up and go arrest somebody. You get up and you start the investigation
and you respond.
You pursue.
And you respond
to the victims. Right.
You let the victims know what's going on.
Right.
You communicate
Here's
with them.
Here's what we have done.
On an effective, in a very, you know, effective basis.
Right.
So they know that you're looking at it and you constantly keep them updated. Right?
Yes. That's a failure right. on a massive level.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Nearly 3 million more people signed up for Obamacare coverage. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute. That's the total number of Americans who benefited from a special six-month enrollment period that ended in mid-August, according to President Biden. He announced today that more than 12 million people are now insured through the Affordable Care Act. A group of investors that together manage some $10 trillion in assets is offering a blueprint to assess climate pledges made by oil and gas companies and whether they'll reach net zero carbon emissions by 2050. The group includes the Church of England Pensions Board and HSBC Global Asset Management. The Federal Reserve says U.S. manufacturing production slowed more than expected in August, up just 0.2% compared to a more than 1.5% rise in July. Meanwhile, the price of imported goods fell in August by 0.3%. Fuel prices led the decline, which was the first since October of 2020. Export prices rose 0.4% in August. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, we will get to the story out there that, remember, we were told that everybody was in an agreement that the only way to pull out of Afghanistan was the way that we pulled out.
That's right.
Well, that's not necessarily true, because General Miller, who was the head of all U.S. forces and NATO forces till July, who stepped down, I wonder why,
about the same time that Biden was on a phone call with the then president of Afghanistan.
Yeah, probably right around that time. Yes, stepped down. We asked the question, why did he step down? Remember when that happened?
Right.
We asked, why did Miller step down?
Because the job wasn't finished. Right. I mean, you know, in fact, it was very unfinished at that point. Why would he step down?
Well, he spoke to a closed session. We don't have any, audio of it. But he spoke to a closed session and said and made it known, no, I was not in favor of pulling out. He was the guy.
Yeah.
He's the guy. That's like sort of saying, well, look, that's like the owner of the team saying, look, the fans were all in agreement with what we did. Everybody was in an agreement. The fan, well, except for the coach.
Yeah, right.
The coach was in agreement, but the fans were.
Right.
And some of the other people, the people in sales were.
Yeah. It was 4th and 19.
The security guards were, but the coach wasn't.
Yeah.
The guy who was in charge of U.S. troops and NATO troops, all the troops in Afghanistan, was against pulling out. It's going to get tough. We'll also play some audio from Marco Rubio, who's, said, look, I was in the intelligence committee. I know. I saw it. He said, I saw the information. We knew this was going to be a disaster. We knew it was. Everyone knew.
Yeah.
You can't be making this case. This is going to come down upon them. A lot of Democrats walked out of that meeting going, oh, boy.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's with General Miller. So we'll have that coming up for you. Plus your calls and comments if you'd like to get in. 866-90-RED-EYE. Also, that story coming up that Joe Biden summons. There it is. Summons Sinema and Manchin to the White House.
Okay. Here's your forecast.
We're looking at a prolonged period of rain for the South, which could result in some flash flooding. Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, the Carolinas, the lower Tennessee Valley, all looking at areas of rain showers through at least Sunday. Part of the issue here is a stalled frontal boundary extending from the northeast into the lower Mississippi Valley. There's a slight risk of severe thunderstorms today in the northeast and northern mid-Atlantic. The issue in the south is largely due to Tropical Depression Nicholas. From the northeast into the mid-Atlantic, there's a stationary front and low pressure system, which is causing showers from the Washington, D.C. area into Philadelphia, New York, and Boston this morning, extending back through most of Pennsylvania, but east of central New York. Look for possible showers and thunderstorms east of the Dakotas into Iowa, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. That system will be lingering at least through tomorrow as well. The National Forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Your forecast is brought to you by Low Viscosity Kendall Super DFE. With increased protection and fuel savings, low viscosity leads to victory. Kendall Motor Oil, you get out what you put in.
Bringing people together, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Remember a couple of weeks ago when Biden came out and said that everyone in his staff, every military person said to get out of Afghanistan, and this was the only way to do it, and we said he's lying? Well, the former commander of U.S. troops in Afghanistan told senators Tuesday he opposed a full withdrawal from the country and advised Pentagon leadership of his position. The top Republican on the Senate Armed Services Committee told reporters after a closed-door briefing with the general. General Scott Miller, who commands U.S. NATO troops in Afghanistan until July, told committee members that he had informed the defense secretary, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, that's Lloyd Austin, Mark Milley, and U.S. Central Command Chief General Frank McKenzie, that he was opposed to the total withdrawal. Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma said, we heard enough to know that there are inconsistencies between what the administration has said and the truth. What he's saying is the administration lied.
Yes.
Clearly, Mr. President Biden did not listen to all the military advice given to him, including the general who commanded all the U.S. and NATO troops in Afghanistan until July. When he stepped down. And we asked the question back then, did he step down because he knew what the president was saying was BS? Is that why he chose that time to step down? Because that's when the president was lying as much as he has lied about Afghanistan.
Well, if you look at it, why else would he be stepping down? Why would he do that in July? Not after the withdrawal is done. He just retires and rides off into the sunset. No, it was in July, in the heat of this, and that's also when the president called the then president of Afghanistan and said, hey, look, we know things aren't going well, but whether that's true or not, we need to paint the picture that it is going well. You have the guy in charge of all the U.S. and NATO troops saying, no, we can't fully withdraw. We can't do this way.
It's going to be a mess.
And the commander-in-chief is not going to have it any other way. Defiant Joe wins again. So he steps down.
I want to play this audio cut. This is Marco Rubio from 2 days ago making a statement when they had the hearing with Secretary of State Blinken at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And again, the continuing lie coming from the State Department and this administration that they had no idea that this was going to happen. No idea. Taken completely surprised by it.
Secretary, in your statement, I think that the most troubling thing is the following quote from you. Even the most pessimistic assessment did not predict the government forces in Kabul would collapse while U.S. forces remained. I'd back that up by saying you also cite General Milley, who said there was no indication that there would be a rapid collapse of the Afghan army and government. For much of last year, I was the acting chairman of intelligence. I'm now the vice chairman of intelligence. I've been tracking this very, very closely. And just going back to the beginning of this year, obviously, I can't quote the titles of the pieces, but let me suffice it to say that there are numerous pieces that would be categorized as it's going to hit the fan. And but let's just for a moment put that.
So there you go. And then he goes to talk about other things. He talks about actually what was happening, on the ground, and the fact that the Taliban was able to go and retool and refresh and everything in Pakistan, then cross the border again, and they still held territory. But the fact is, we knew it was going to happen. And probably one of the reasons, and again, Scott Miller said, I talked to Milley. So if Milley says we had no warning whatsoever, well, that may be a lie, because his own general in Afghanistan, who was the head of U.S. and NATO troops, may have told him that exact thing.
Mm-hmm.
That we need to keep troops in here. We can't pull them out. And so the fact that that happened, yes, that was a huge turning point, because now we know that not only will somebody in the administration disagree with them, yeah, actually somebody did, and the person that disagreed with the president was the person in charge.
Yeah, the guy.
The guy.
I mean, if there's anyone in this case that you listen to, it's him. And likely because he saw what we have always seen here, and that is the fact, especially toward the end, as we learned that they didn't reach out to Americans in an effort to get American citizens out of Afghanistan first. No, in fact, the play was, let's get with the then president of Afghanistan and create a scenario that doesn't exist, that everything is fine, everything's going well as planned, which also, by the way, is the information that those American citizens in Afghanistan were getting.
Yeah,
hey, everything's
exactly
fine. The president of the U.S. says everything's fine. We don't need to go. And there's no way. And remember Biden saying, oh, there's no way the Taliban is going to take over. That's not going to happen. A month later. Well, it was inevitable.
and we will stay until every American
That's
is
right.
out.
That's right.
I mean, the lies are just, I mean, they're just, they seem, I don't know, they seem so comfortable in their lies. I don't know how else to phrase it.
It's as if for this president, lying is as important as breathing. That he has to do it. There's just this urge to lie, whether it's a lie about whether he got a job interview at a lumber company in Idaho, or extremely crucial lies, like the entire list of them, very long list, related to Afghanistan. He's not capable of the truth. He just isn't.
Not in, and it's that the thing is, it's so obvious that, and it's so frequent, and there's, like I said, the, you know, not taking questions, the mics being turned off, mm-hmm. the not answering the questions, the deflecting of the questions of things that are so serious, the continuing poll numbers dropping. That's the one thing that you see over and over again, is the fact that the poll numbers have just crashed. They know they're crashing, and they believe that the only way to save it is to double down on the exact same policy that has been killing them.
Yeah.
And so you say, how low can they go, or how bad can it get? And I don't know where the bottom is on it.
Well,
and then you have
right.
days like the last couple of days, you know, again, and yesterday was not a good day, that coming out.
Mm-hmm.
That General Scott Miller, head of NATO forces and American forces in Afghanistan, said, no, I was against the pullout.
Right.
Totally pulls the rug out and says, okay, another lie.
And he stepped down in July.
Right. Everything's a lie.
It's defiant Joe.
Unless Joe would say, well, no, when I talked to everybody yesterday, they said that, and we fired this guy last month.
Yeah, yeah.
That probably would be...
That was months
right,
ago.
Right, that probably... that was 4 or 5 days ago.
Right.
Doesn't matter.
No, I mean, I could see him saying that. Well, he meant everyone that's currently in play.
Right, because the person who was in charge stepped down
yeah.
because he disagreed with your policy.
Yeah. When he says everyone, Jen Psaki, when he says everyone, he doesn't literally mean everyone. What about the guy who was in charge of all of the U.S. and NATO troops? Should he not include that in the everyone?
No, he doesn't.
That guy?
No.
No. Okay. Okay. I honestly, I just wonder where this goes from here. How many more? These aren't small lies.
No, they're not.
These aren't. Hey, I got a job offer from that lumber company in Boise one time. These are massive lies that led to the death of American service members, and right now have American citizens in danger, immediate danger, in a this terrorist massive super state that is Afghanistan.
You know, funny thing is that one, the Paul Bunyan lie, that's a Trump lie,
right?
When you look back to Trump, the things that Trump would lie about were things that it's meaningless. Why are you even bringing it up? That became
the
frustrating.
It's a feel-good-in-the-moment lie.
Right. When it came to, like I said, on the issues for Trump, Trump was a moderate.
Mm-hmm.
I agreed with him more than I disagreed with him. But when you look at overall the things that he put forth, he was moderate. In where the American public is right now, he was a moderate. Trump would go down. It's the rabbit holes he went down that had nothing to do with the major issues that he was dealing with the vast majority of time. These lies are huge lies on major issues involving the lives of American citizens.
Well, as the editorial board at the Wall Street Journal put it together for then President Trump and said, you know, just tell the the facts about what you have accomplished.
Oh, and COVID,
You're not promoting yourself enough.
Yeah.
Of all the things to tell Donald Trump, you're not promoting your own accomplishments enough.
That was the message from
the Wall Street Journal editorial.
Because he couldn't keep focused on the issues that matter.
Right.
All the side issues mattered, the little battles.
Right.
With reporters who were meaningless, mattered to him, mattered to a significant portion of his followers who said, no, he has to win every time on every issue. And we went, well, he's not doing that.
Right.
You stick to the four or five issues, you make it simple.
Right.
Miss, make it simple, stupid.
There you go.
Focus on the four or five issues, pound it.
I always thought it was KISS. Keep it simple, stupid.
Oh, okay.
I think either one works.
Either one is fine. That silence was not objecting to what you had said at all, anyway. But keep it simple, stupid, actually. That's the one that's used more.
Yeah, okay.
The make, I want, because, you know, make America great again and all that.
Hmm. Ah.
I just made that up as I went along. I was searching for a lifeline.
Yeah.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, everything keeps coming around again. Yesterday, the story came out about, 200,000 illegal immigrants now encounters at the border, a 300% increase from a year ago. So everything keeps – things may disappear out of the news cycle, but the things that replace it are bad. Or remember when – the media stopped talking about the border. That's one of the comments that we got, one of the calls we got from our listeners saying, okay, it's just to hide what's going on at the border. And we said, no, it will come back. But everything that has happened afterwards has even been worse news for Biden. And so yesterday it's like, okay, I was thinking maybe there'll be a break in the news. There wasn't, because more of the Milley stuff came out than the General Miller stuff had come out, where the guy who was the head general of all of Afghanistan came out and said, no, sorry, I was against pulling out.
Well, these doesn't fit
the narrative. And then at that point, then you've got the news coming out about what's going on at the border. It's every day. It's a skyscraper deep, you know, pile of bad news for Biden.
These are not in the bubble of today items. These are... the border crisis is very real. These are not political footballs. These are very real situations where American lives are in danger to some extent. And we talk about that because we don't know who's coming across the southern border right now. The former chief of the Border Patrol was saying that they know that there are suspected terrorists coming across the border. They know that. So now, after Afghanistan, the question would be, all right, how many are coming across right now? Is there a renewed effort by the enemy? It all of this goes down to the fact that the government is charged with protecting the American people, and this president doesn't care about the American people.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.